Hey there, I'm Ange McCormack, and this is 7am's Best Of series, where we look back at our favourite episodes from 2023. Today's episode was made on a night that Australia will never forget. On October 14, Australia voted no to the Voice to Parliament referendum. Myself, Daniel James, who's the guest in this episode, and Scott Mitchell, editor of 7am, were all watching the referendum results come in together, and it wasn't long before we started working on what would become our No Wins episode. Before we play it, I want to reflect on what that night was like with the editor of 7am, Scott Mitchell. Scott, how did it feel for you getting to that night after months of reporting and coverage on The Voice, and then we finally got there?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we got to the night, all of us were exhausted to some extent, not as much as the people who were involved in the campaign, but we'd been working with Daniel James for months on this series we did in that final week, and we were so conscious of trying to, I guess, rise journalistically to that moment and do some really special and important content that brought in history and also what was going on inside the campaigns. And we all put a lot into that, none more so than Daniel himself, who led that whole thing. And getting to that night, you know, I think none of us knew exactly how it would go, but we knew we wanted to do it with Daniel and we wanted to react to that moment. And I think in some ways it was predicted by the polls, but it was still a shocking moment. And we were so lucky to have Daniel in terms of when we hit record and got him into the studio to talk about the result. You know, while people were still talking about swings and numbers, he had such an amazing grasp of how significant that result was and what it meant for the country, for Indigenous Australians, for this whole process. And in a way, listening to it now, you know, it sounds like something that he would have taken weeks to digest that result and come up with that analysis, but he had it right then.
The clarity that Daniel had on the night was really amazing, and I think, you know, kind of unmatched in my mind, just how he was able to reflect on this result that felt so stark at the time. Like, it took, you know, under an hour or just over an hour, I think, to get that result after months of campaigns, and then you just see those two letters, N-O, and to both react to that but then provide this level of analysis in a really thoughtful way, I think, is so impressive. And, you know, on the night, like, Daniel was literally struggling to speak because he'd lost, ironically, his voice during the series that we were making. He was like quite raspy, but he still managed to bring it. And the way he talked about the result, there's this analogy he uses about the result feeling like this loud horn blaring in your ears. That's always stuck with me about how significant that moment was for the Indigenous community in Australia. And, you know, it was a really bruising debate, and a lot of Indigenous leaders took some time away kind of from the public discourse, I guess, immediately. Like, there was that week of silence. But also since then, I think a fair few in the community have taken a little bit of a step back, had some time to think about how that debate affected them. But I did see Daniel James tweet the other day that he's back in the saddle and ready to go for 2024, which is amazing news because we love having him on the show.
It's great news. And, you know, the way that you and Daniel were able to have this conversation and for us to bring that to our audience with that depth the very next day, I think was a real highlight for the whole team. But let's get into the episode, which starts with you, Ange, reading a statement that came out in the hours after the no result.
Last night, Australians resoundingly voted against the Voice to Parliament referendum in every state. After the result, Indigenous leaders who supported the referendum released a statement calling for a week of silence to grieve the result. It says, "Recognition in the Constitution of the descendants of the original and continuing owners of Australia would have been a great advance for Australians. Alas, the majority have rejected it." This is a bitter irony that people who have been on this continent for 235 years would refuse to recognise those whose home this has been for 60,000 and more years is beyond reason. "We will not rest long. Pack up the Uluru statement from the heart. Fly our flags low. Talk not of recognition and reconciliation, only of justice and the rights of our people in our own country." From Schwartz Media, I'm Ange McCormack. This is 7am. Following the referendum result, First Nations Australians won't be recognised in the Constitution and they won't have a voice. And it means the Uluru Statement from the Heart has been rejected. The path of voice, treaty and truth is over. Today, contributor to The Monthly and the Saturday paper, Daniel James, on what this result says about our country and how we'll move forward after voting no. It's Sunday, October 15th. So, Daniel, we've just learned that the referendum has been defeated. We've been wondering for months about which way this vote would go. What's your reaction to this result?
My initial reaction was not one of disbelief, because it's intellectually it's something that we've seen coming down the line for months now in terms of the way that the polls have been trending. But it was kind of a numbness, you know, to have Anthony Green on the ABC basically calling the referendum defeated before 7:30.
So we're calling South Australia has voted no, and of course with three states voting no, the referendum is defeated as well, whatever happens in Queensland and Western Australia.
So there it is. Anthony Green has called it at 7:24pm. The Indigenous Voice referendum has been defeated.
Any referendum is the clearest articulation of what the Australian people think on any one particular subject matter. And this result is a resounding no, a deafening no, one that will resonate for years and one that will have ramifications for years as well. So intellectually, I was going through all of that, and then there was a feeling of numbness and then a tremendous feeling of sadness, because whether you're a yes or a no supporter of this referendum, what it actually represents is an outright flat rejection from the Australian people of a very simple and humble offering from First Nations people who have presented this to Australians in a peaceful, considered, thoughtful way. And the referendum has just given a clear and utter no to the idea of constitutional recognition and a voice enshrined in the Constitution.
And as you said, it was a resounding no, a clear no. What do you think that says about the country?
I think that there is an apathy within the electorate. One thing was really obvious, and that was the apathy amongst some of the people that were lining up or had just finished voting in the referendum. And it was clear that some people weren't sure why they were there.
It's like the lack of information. It's just, yeah, doesn't give us a confidence as to, so I'd rather have it no.
It was clear that some people didn't want to be there.
Yeah. I don't know what it's really about, so I just voted no.
And it was also very clear that some people weren't across the issues at all. The reasons behind that, we can only speculate.
I felt that we already have them in the parliament, our Indigenous people, so I kind of thought I'd go the no vote today.
It's one thing to lose an argument for the yes people, to lose an argument in a fair fight. But this wasn't a fair fight. This was a toxic campaign, a nauseous campaign, a campaign that saw Aboriginal people caught in the middle. It was a racist campaign. It was an ill-informed campaign, one full of misinformation and disinformation. The Yes campaign didn't do enough to combat that, and the No campaign exploited that beautifully. It's something that we can probably expect in elections as we move forward, that, okay, we don't need to talk the truth. We don't need to have a fair debate. We just need to throw grenades every day that are totally factually incorrect, that are lies, and it works.
If we think of some of those tactics from the no side, do you think it's less that yes lost the referendum and more that no was clever enough to win?
I think given the scale of the defeat, you could say that yes lost it and no won it, but I don't think it's because of any sort of amazing political skill or strategy on the no side. I just think that the yes campaign allowed the no campaign to get a head start. They didn't have any operatives within their campaign to get in the gutter with the no side and really stomp out some of those lies and that information as they were being told. Complicit in all this, of course, has been the Australian media. And I think a couple of weeks ago, the Australians for a Murdoch Royal Commission did some analysis of the coverage from the Murdoch media in particular, and 70% of the coverage from that particular news organisation had been against The Voice. And when you're talking about constitutional reform is a very hard thing to achieve in this country. And I think that the base politics, if you don't know, vote no mantra has been very effective. I think having Warren Mundine and Jacinta Price as basically the faces of the no campaign has been devastating for the chances of any constitutional reform, because it's given an easy out to anyone who is a soft yes or a soft no.
It enabled those voters to say, oh, well, look, there's prominent Indigenous leaders who are against this.
Absolutely. And look, I think that's been a really effective element of their strategy. But if we really look at the campaign and the idea of the referendum as a whole, if you're going to pinpoint a time and a place when the referendum was lost, it was when Peter Dutton came out and opposed it, mischaracterised it as a Canberra voice. History shows us that to have any chance of having a referendum to be successful in this country, it requires bipartisan support. And Peter Dutton decided to use the referendum to build his own political capital, but I don't think it's going to result in any sort of electoral benefit for them come the next election. There are dozens of PhDs to be written about last night's result, but the early analysis is that the Yes campaign was a very ineffective campaign. The No campaign was somewhat effective, but I think overall the thing that killed the referendum was an apathy from the Australian people. Don't really care about the issue, turning up the vote because I have to, because I don't know about the vote, I'm going to vote no anyway, and I'm just going to get on with my day. And in many ways, that's the most distressing part of it all, because it means it gives a green light to the people who have brought a level of Trumpian politics to this debate, gives them a green light to carry forward and to try those tactics again. And it's going to be pretty damaging for our democracy, I believe.
Coming up after the break, what will it take to rebuild a path to reconciliation?
The City of London in Andrew O'Hagan's latest novel is crumbling. But don't mistake this for pessimism. Instead, the author insists it's a necessary process for a better future.
Change doesn't just happen because it's time for a change. Change has to be forced. We live in the end not in countries that are settled places, they're just imagined communities.
I'm Michael Williams, and on this week's Read This, I sit down with Andrew O'Hagan to discuss his latest, Caledonian Road. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
As a 7am listener, you're already familiar with many of the journalists who work for the Saturday Paper. For a limited time, subscribe to Australia's leading independent news source, the Saturday Paper, and you'll receive the Saturday Paper's stainless steel coffee cup, made in collaboration with Fresco, for free. Subscribe from just $2.10 a week. Simply visit thesaturdaypaper.com.au/offer.
So, Daniel, the referendum debate was toxic and divisive, but there was one thing that both sides at a campaign level agreed on, that there is a gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. So how will that be addressed now, do you think, without a voice? What will we do now?
Well, no one has actually come out with any sort of plan as to what we will do from here. The debate itself has emboldened racists within the community, it has to be said. It means that it is now easier to vocalise hatred towards First Nations people in this country than it has ever been, and that's a result of this debate and the way it's been conducted. So in terms of things like closing the gap, in terms of things like reconciliation, we are worse off here today on the 15th of October than we were on the 14th of October, because we know that there is very little will to do anything to address disadvantage. I hear that there are some people talking about starting a treaty process. To get all the language groups and clan groups and the tribal groups around Australia to get together and start negotiating a federal treaty with a government that has to be willing to do that, that is years and years off. And one thing that would have been able to start that process and help that process along would have been a federal voice to Parliament. But that is not to be. And so people going around prophesying that treaty and truth-telling is the way forward, I have no confidence whatsoever that the Albanese government will want to touch this issue around treaty, around First Nations recognition, around social justice for First Nations people. They certainly won't want to touch it this term. And if they get in the second term, they'll move on to something else. So I think this result sends a message that the appetite from the Australian people to do things like a truth-telling process and a treaty process is not there, because they couldn't even bring themselves to vote for a very, very modest proposal in an Indigenous voice to Parliament.
Mm. If we think about the Uluru Statement, voice, treaty, truth, where does this leave that statement and that proposal?
Well, the Uluru Statement from the heart is effectively dead. I mean, there's no purpose for it anymore. There won't be another referendum on it. Don't believe for a second what Little Proud or Dutton say around a referendum for recognition. That won't happen. Dutton's already walked away from that. So the idea of the voice, the idea espoused within the Uluru Statement is ostensibly dead. I know it talks about a Makarrata Commission and eventually a treaty process. The political reality of last night means that that is a long way off. There are going to be continued divisions within the political classes of this country. And I hate to say it, but I think there will also be deep divisions emerge within the Indigenous community, which is going to be very, very sad. But that's how damaging this debate has been.
Mm. Marcia Langton wrote in the Saturday paper yesterday that reconciliation is dead. I'm wondering how you see it, though, and if you do agree with her assessment of reconciliation, or if you have more hope than that, that there is a path to reconciliation in this country.
Yesterday's result marks the end of a lifetime of advocacy for a number of senior First Nations leaders across the country and over time. And people like Marcia, people like Noel Pearson, people like Mick Gooder, people like Tom Karma, people like Pat Anderson, Pat Turner, they've been remarkable in the way that they've led our mob through so many important issues, helped make sure that there is service provision there and that it's culturally appropriate, and had to fight tooth and nail for all the dollars to make that happen. But this is the last major piece of advocacy for a whole generation of First Nation advocates and leaders. There is now a small opportunity here, and it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of time, because there's going to be some deep scars run throughout the community, and people are going to carry that personally. But there is no choice but to go on, to carry on. I always think in terms of times like this is that, okay, the battle is over, but the war goes on. And I don't mean that in a flippant sense. I mean the war on disadvantage, the war on inequity goes on, the war on improving outcomes for First Nations people across education, health and justice goes on. I know it sounds like I'm bitter, but there's a lot of passion flying about. I have full faith in the First Nations community that we will pick ourselves up, gather ourselves around each other, support each other, and carry on doing what we have to do because there is no choice.
Throughout the series on 7am this week, Daniel, you've been asking people, Marcia Langton, Barnaby Joyce, Thomas Mayo, all of them kind of at the end of your interviews the same question, which is, what Australia do we wake up to on October 15th? We're here now, so I want to ask you the same question. What Australia are we in today?
I think we're in an Australia that is diminished and Australia that is on the precipice of going down the path of Trumpian politics. I think we're on the precipice of being ruled by a political class that hasn't done much for itself outside of politics itself. I think that it's a tremendously sad day. I always said that if the vote was to be yes, it would be heard as a whisper by First Nations people. If it was a no, it would be deafening. This is like someone has got a loud hailer right next to your ear and they're shouting no time and time again. And it's not no just for the referendum, it's no on wanting to hear from First Nations people in a peaceful, respectful way. That won't change. Our mob will be angry, but they will always be respectful, they will always be peaceful, and they'll always be generous. But that's going to take a long time to heal. So I think the Australia of this morning is one that is lesser than it was yesterday.
Daniel, it's been a really long campaign, but we've really appreciated your sensitive reporting, your expert analysis on this bruising debate. But thank you for your reporting and your analysis, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This year, the Saturday paper celebrates 10 years as Australia's leading independent newspaper. In that time, it's built a peerless reputation for quality journalism, for telling stories that are ignored elsewhere. It's the essential account of the week in politics, culture, and news. When you read the Saturday paper, you don't need to read anything else. Subscribe today from just $2.10 per week. Visit thesaturdaypaper.com.au/subscribe. The Saturday Paper, the whole story.